Welcome back to the Food Trainers Podcast. I'm Lauren and I'm here with Kayleen.
Hello, everyone.
You know what today is?
I'm guessing you don't mean Thursday.
For the record, for those of you listening, we record on Thursdays, even though we air them on Mondays, but that's not exactly what I meant. This is our 50th episode.
That is a milestone. That's crazy.
So thank you, everyone, for listening and spreading the word. I love hearing people listening in like faraway places, especially because we're not going to any faraway places. And also, you know, just how you listen. You know, some say they listen while they take a walk or they listen when they cook. Mm. You know, I think this podcast started like most of my ideas do, which is like, I want to try this. It'll be fun to have a podcast. And it's, you know, not only connected us with so many, but I think it just also forces our hands at researching. Mm-hmm. Another, you know, nerdy love of mine.
Looking into stuff. Yeah. Yes. Look at us now.
Exactly. 50-50.
So usually we end each episode with one question we call our Q&A. But today we're going to do like a quick fire episode and answer your questions. We ask you to ask us about anything, anything nutrition related.
Yeah, quite an assortment. Yeah.
And this first question actually is really funny.
This is funny. Yeah.
Because Lauren did not realize that this question came from my sister.
I know. I should have put two and two together, but it wasn't, you know, when people ask questions, you don't have like a picture or anything.
But and my sister didn't realize people could see that you were the one who asked the question.
And maybe other people don't
see
either.
She thought it was anonymous, but no, we do see your name and your Instagram. So this is funny because she's been talking about this a lot lately. My sister Meg, she asked, how much water is too much? And this is classic her because she said, I drink 160 liters a day. Is that okay? And Lauren probably was like, oh my gosh, this girl is crazy.
No, I assumed it was a typo, but she did correct it.
She
later
did
in
come
the day,
back, and realized she meant 160 ounces a day, but that's still a lot.
That definitely still is a lot. Just such a funny coincidence. Kayleen's like, should we say that it's my sister? I'm like, I think it's okay. It's not really embarrassing. It is the sister. She has a many sisters, but it is the sister who sometimes objects to our science. So hopefully I'll keep it straight for you, Meg. So we usually suggest 80 is Grady. That's our 80 ounces a day of water is great. We just like a stupid name for everything. And that's 10 cups, which is still, I mean, for me as like the, you know, sort of hopeless hydrator.
Yeah.
That's a lot to get to. So 20 cups would be, you know, sort of what Meg is having is double that. Mm-hmm. So it's 20 cups or 5 liters. And I think unless now I know, because I was just taking a stab at it. I was thinking like, unless you're losing like major amounts of fluid via exercise, is she?
Not a ton.
Sweating a lot? Okay. To me, it sounds like too much. That being said, everybody utilizes water differently. Some require, you know, you can't just go based on, I know the standard figure is your weight, dividing your weight in half. So like a 160 pound person would need 80 ounces a day, that kind of thing. That's just a ballpark because again, what kind of climate are you in? Is it dry? Are you sweating? All of those things. Having said that, I would say a gallon is usually the maximum amount that I recommend. I know that my son and like lots of, I think it must have been like a TikTok or Snapchat thing. Like they were trying to, you know.
Like the whole gallon, like
the
a milk.
handle jug of water. He went through that phase. So a few things. First, you can definitely overhydrate, you know, and overhydrating may be more dangerous than underhydrating. Second, you just have to look at your urine. I know it's like a lovely topic, but we're all adults here probably. Your urine should be pale and not clear. Okay. And is hers clear?
It's clear.
Not to out everything about her. So it shouldn't be clear or colorless, and it shouldn't be concentrated either. That's a sign that you're not hydrating enough. So just, you know, the two P's, pale and plentiful. Whenever I used to do sports nutrition talks, I would always say that. The worry with overhydrating is that you dilute your electrolytes, especially sodium, which is one of your electrolytes. You can get something, sorry, Meg, called hyponatremia, which is just low sodium. And I, you know, just to give an example, you do see this sometimes with marathons and people, sort of hydrating too much. I actually had a friend of a friend at a marathon finish line who passed out from hyponatremia. And, you know, just in general, if you are going to hydrate or if you do, you know, sort of err on the side of drinking a ton, I would salt your food a little bit. I've actually been The other thing to think about is that people who eat, let's say, I'm using air quotes, but clean, unprocessed diets actually don't get a lot of sodium in their diets. That's like a side point. We actually have an episode next season all about salt, which is really actually a fascinating topic. But I've been using these Element, L-M-N-T, electrolyte packets, just in terms of replenishing electrolytes. Not a bad idea for somebody also like your sister who... We can give her some who hydrates a lot. So again, as I ramble, you can do too much of anything or too little. Meg, check your pee. I'd either scale back or salt your food or replace some of those electrolytes. And as we're talking about electrolytes, the reason I like these packets is also just that they're not sugary, because a lot of like your
Gatorade or something like that,
and things like that are sugar bombs.
Yeah. All right. Good one. A good way to start.
Exactly. We don't have any other family members. Don't worry.
Yes. Our next question is from Tori, who we don't know.
We don't think we know.
I don't think so. She asked how to decrease meal portions. And I know this is just something you're focusing on in food stalking next week. So yes. We can maybe.
Actually, this will air after I do it with the food stalking. So
no spoilers.
Exactly. When you're like tweaking or improving your diet, like let's say decreasing sugar and carbs, I'd make the changes first, Tori, to what you're eating, you know, rather than I think people try to do everything at the same time. And then of course, you know, once your body has the right nutrients and you're getting good fats and you're getting enough protein and not getting all the sugars and the carbs that can stimulate your appetite coming in, portion control is almost happens a little bit by itself. Sometimes I was on the phone with like a new-ish client yesterday, client in Pennsylvania. Not that that's relevant. I just always think in my head, I sort of have like a map of the country I'm speaking to someone. I just realized that anyway, when I said it out loud. She was actually, it's been a few weeks into her food training, and she was, you know, just floored that she was leaving things over, which was definitely not her MO when we started without me specifically suggesting it. She was just getting sort of more satisfied sooner. If that's not the case, and you feel your portions are too large, the first step, which sounds a little counterintuitive, would be to make sure lunch is substantial.
Mm-hmm. You maybe explain like triple threat lunches in case people don't know.
Do you want to explain triple threat lunches?
Yeah, well, so for our fixed programs and a lot of Lauren's clients, we have something we call a diamond day. And so if you think of a diamond shape, it's widest at the center.
I'm making a diamond.
Yeah. You can't see that, but it's widest at the center, and that's lunch.
Right. So lunch is, in my opinion, is just the secret sauce in terms of like a successfully portioned day and also a day that you're in control and not grazing and bingey, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So like a triple threat lunch, like you said, it sets you up to portion later on in the day as well. So a triple threat, it's protein. So like chicken or fish or eggs, that's the first component. And then there's produce. So 2 cups or half a plate of vegetables. And the third component is a fabulous fat. Or fab fat, as we call it.
Exactly. Amazing. Kayleen does the, you know, sort of the rule books for our program. So well acquainted with the triple threat lunch. I think, you know, while it may seem, as I was saying, we were asked about portion control and we're telling you to increase your lunch size, most people have issues with portions later in the day. With this triple threat lunch, or really just a balanced, non-skimpy lunch, you can then work on your snack and your dinner portions much more. You'll stand a chance, I always say. Dinner is the most important time of the day to portion. So Tori, I would start there. For all of us, our metabolic rate or the way we burn food isn't as strong later in the day. I would suggest if we say a triple threat lunch, where lunch is that like, you know, wide part of the diamond, we usually say salad plate suppers. You see, we do have like a stupid term for everything. Smaller plates, research has shown, and it's actually one of the reasons why, you know, sort of portions, especially in the US, have grown so large, is that actually dinner plates from like, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they're enormous now versus what they were. Anyway, the smaller the plate, the less you tend to eat. It's why you should drink water out of a big glass or bottle, because it encourages you, you know, sort of to drink more, but eat off of, especially a dinner off of a plate that's not too large.
That makes sense. Okay, so Diamond Day first, have your larger nutrition-packed lunch, and then try maybe after a week or so to reduce your dinner portion.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you're really going to get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of results if weight is an issue or if sleep is an issue, mm-hmm. or just even in terms of your body functioning better from an immune perspective if you sort of taper your day, mm-hmm. Rather than trying to like portion everything,
yeah.
which usually backfires.
Which a somewhat related question then. David asks, calorie counting, yes or no?
So sorry, David, if you like to calorie count, but overall, that's definitely a big no for us. We look much more, and if you've listened, I'm not saying like if you've listened, like haven't you listened? I'm just kidding. But we look much more at what foods are doing in the body. So is a food that you're eating, like let's say an avocado, decreasing your appetite, or it could be something of the same calories, a chip that's increasing your mm-hmm. appetite, just to give an example, are they helping GI health? So helping that microbiome, which affects your cravings and affects your mood and immunity, or harming it? Are they causing you to gain fat or lose fat? So we think much more in terms of the function of foods. We do give clients budgets for how many carbs to have in the week or how many servings. We measure them in fists, think of like mm-hmm. fist size, which is about a cup. And we also give clients budgets for alcohol and other things. So we are concerned with the how much question. I don't think you can ignore that, but not with, sort of tedious calorie counting per se.
Yeah. And David, I'd say listen to episode 48 on our like food tracking for how we suggest tracking, which is we've proven to be important, or food journaling, whatever you want to call it.
And I have to say just an aside, because, once the episode airs, we then hear from mm-hmm. people and clients and that kind of thing. Some episodes like we are really excited about and everyone's like, yeah, not so much. And the food journaling podcast, I can't tell you how many people were either like, okay, that motivated me or that was so helpful. And they said because we shared what we had done, uh-huh. which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, we got a lot of likes on the picture on Instagram too.
Like Kayleen posted our
more than our, we normally outed us. Yeah. But
anyway,
it seems
sorry.
Like people liked it. Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to that, some people seem to like it. Maybe you won't, but go back, check mm-hmm. that out, David.
Sorry. Okay, so next up is Sarah, who says, I exercise and don't eat a lot and still gained weight. Help.
So I would say definitely, especially, and I'll explain why, Sarah, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. I'll give a little bit of an example. So a couple of weeks ago, I was on a phone session. A client was expressing much what Sarah did. She felt she was doing well with her exercise. Her eating was so much better than it had been, and the scale didn't move that particular week. Mm-hmm. It had moved. And then she mentioned like two examples, obviously I won't give them, of like serious, sort of family stress, that kind of thing. And so we discussed what we call cortisol cutters, another term. And the examples of those would be like meditation or an Epsom salt bath, box breathing, foam rolling. What else? What am I missing?
Maybe yoga or listening to music.
Yoga. Yeah.
Journaling.
Exactly. So these, I feel as though like there's something about the word self-care that people feel like it's like an optional, it just feels like an extra. I think of it as cortisol cutters as like a component of wellness. Every day, I would say at least 10 or 15 minutes of every day. I mean, in a full day, that really shouldn't be that much. Something that's dialing back your stress. Even people who don't feel they have a specific stress, like this client, sorry, there's so many beeps and noises. We're all under a lot of chronic stress. So if you're eating well, exercising and gaining, I would say it's usually one of three things. The stress we just mentioned, mm-hmm. sleep, which is something like you could have the same 2 weeks. So stress, sleep, hormones, or like some sort of like a combo platter of like those three.
Take a look at those three. Yeah. Okay. And then one final question. This one's from Marcy, and she asks, what are some high histamine foods and are they important to avoid?
Yeah. First of all, this is a funny question because this is one of Kayleen's like sort of
favorite topics.
Yeah. And B, first, and I also think it's like a thank you, Marcy. Mm-hmm. We get good questions.
Yeah.
But this also happens to hit pretty close to home for me right now. We may or may not cover this next season. I'll see if I'm too bored of like dealing with this. But I've been having these like weird, this weird, like, histamine stuff. And found out that it's, you know, likely related to, you know, hormones. I thought it was, you know, related to like a skin product or a specific food something like that. You really have to, you know, love your 40s. But I've had like four reactions with like my face being like itchy and swollen and all of these things. So anyway, enough about my face. Kayleen's, she's like, you're having another allergic reaction.
It's every few weeks,
yeah,
it feels like.
Really, or perhaps monthly, which is a little hint. But you've probably heard of antihistamines. People take, obviously, these in response to seasonal allergies or allergic reactions. So histamine is that allergic response or immune. It's actually a response of your white blood cells. Most people are fine with highest histamine foods. There's a tiny fraction of people who are truly histamine intolerant. Like they really can't have these foods. And Kayleen and I were also discussing, we also think there's like, you know, for reactions like mine or people who are more,
I get like, I don't know, like stuffiness, like congestion type stuff that I thought was maybe a histamine reaction.
Right. And it might not be a reaction, but I would venture to say, and I know that there are, you know, sort of dietitians who really specialize in this, that if your body, just like if your body's, if you're autoimmune, you're going to be sort of more vulnerable from an immune perspective. I feel like if you're actively allergic, you're going to be sort of more vulnerable to things that you might not. It's like, reminds me of oral allergy syndrome, which is that there are certain environmental triggers like birch, et cetera, that are mimicked in certain foods. So when it's high in the environment, people who have this get this thing about oral allergy syndrome. At certain times of year, clients can't eat certain fruits, which is kind of interesting. Oh. So I think I can see this being similar. This is a little bit new to me, I have to say. But anyway, so I self-medicated because, you know, like,
what, what, you know, else? Yeah,
what am I going to do but guinea pig things? And the problem is that when you, so there are lists of foods that are high in histamines, which happens to be like a Lauren's favorite food list.
Yeah, that's and what I noticed when I looked at it too.
Yeah, it's like ferment. It actually, one of the days where I thought I ate at home, I ate really well. I realized that I had basically gone down the, anyway, so it's chocolate, probably had that. Avocados, usually every single day. Fermented foods.
When I saw fermented foods, I was like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
I can't be giving that up.
I'm like staring at like my like vinegars and
pickles,
a case of bear's fruit kombucha, all these flavors and hard cheeses. So it's just
that
like.
That is all your favorites right there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I could give up. Practically given up booze. I don't eat gluten. Like just take it all anyway. At least coffee's not on the list. So you have to be kind of like, you know, sort of barely either desperate or interested to go down this road. So I'm kind of going down that road and I'll report back. But who was it? Marcy. Hopefully, you know, that helps. Their lists are pretty easy to find if you Google them. But I think we, what else is on it? Bananas.
I saw tomatoes.
Dried fruit. Is tomatoes on it or is
I
it a nightshade?
So, maybe
maybe it's like that makes sense that some of the nightshades would. But yeah, it's really sort of like, it's really a bummer.
Anyway, I know.
So I think that's the last question.
Yeah, for this episode, for season 3.
Exactly. We 3 seasons, 50 episodes. You know, we're not stopping yet.
I know. We'll keep going. We're going to take a short couple week break, do our research like we do, get ready for the next season. And then it will be spring and we'll be back with some new material.
I know. We can now record. This is very exciting. You might have heard us mention it last week in the episode that we can record remotely, even though we love being together. It's our like one outing. You know, our podcast people had discouraged us because they're, you know, like they always want the sound to
be quality,
good.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's nice to get out. But yeah, we could do a mix.
It turned out good. So please, everyone listening, be sure you're subscribed. That way you'll get notifications when we're back with our new episodes. And if you do miss our Monday podcast, leave us a comment or message us and let us know any ideas you have. We love those. And we also, we'll keep up with our Monday newsletter. So if you haven't signed up for that already.
Oh, that's a good idea. You're good. No, I'm actually excited. We have like, you know, a couple, we've hinted at a couple of them during this episode, but some good topics on the agenda. We always change based on, you know, sort of what people
what's
are asking
going
about.
On. Yeah. I guess Lauren will be reading like 5 books a week while she has her free time.
I know. You can always tell what podcast is coming up because all of a sudden I'm like, you know, sort of going down, you know, a research rabbit hole. I actually heard Mark Hyman on a podcast and he was talking. He has a book that we haven't, we were both just talking about this, The Pagan Diet, We haven't. He's definitely making the podcast rounds, but he said when he was kind of getting at, you know, sort of the what his take was going to be on meat, he locked himself away with like a, you know, a 2 foot high stack of, you know, studies or journals. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, that's what he does it too. Exactly. And also I was thinking, I think it's both of them, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. You know, they say like a big component of their success is they read 5 hours a day. So I'm like, oh my God, this is like, how can I fit everything in?
Oh my gosh.
But it does feel, as Kayleen was saying here in New York, a little bit like spring is coming. Mm-hmm. Days are getting a little longer. So hallelujah for that. And thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.